Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we have with us today two great guests from the Seaside Wellness Gardens Rainbow Parrot Conservatory. We've got Nick Sebastian, who's executive director, and Debbie Pentland, who is the clinical director. Welcome.
Hi, Neil. Nice to see
you. So The Seaside Wellness Gardens is a part of the Rainbow Parrot Conservatory. So let's just get the terminology straight. We're going to be talking essentially about Seaside Wellness, but what is the Rainbow Parrot Conservatory?
Yeah, you're correct, and I'm really glad to make that distinction. Our official 501c3 is listed as Rainbow Parrot Conservatory. When I started this in 2014, that was sort of a direction I was going into with my 27-year-old macaw that I have, providing a forever place for him and some other people that have their pet birds that would do this. And we started thinking about the fact that animals always bring something special into everyone's lives, really. And thought, well, you know what, we should really be combining this. We need a large property and have a variety of animals that would provide a therapeutic value interaction for people with autism, Alzheimer's, PTSD, and get the families and the communities together supporting that. So we were looking for property throughout Santa Barbara here and came across actually a very good friend, neighbor, who owns Seaside Gardens. And I talked to her about it. She's an animal lover as well. And we just struck up a deal that we could start up down there. Eventually, as we start our capital campaign, we'd like to purchase the property, but keep it the way it is. It's a beautiful, almost 9-acre property with about 3.5 acres of botanic garden. If anybody hasn't been down there, it's across from Santa Claus Lane on the other side of the freeway from Santa Claus Lane and next to Padero Floral. So it really suits the need that we can now move forward and make the vision happen with it's zoned agricultural. Of course, we can have some animals down there. And families and people with disabilities and veterans, we're looking forward to working with in that environment and appreciating the natural beauty that's down there. And
putting aside Seaside Wellness's mm-hmm. mission for a minute, the Rainbow Parrot Conservatory is not a rescue mission.
It is not.
So what is it specifically without Seaside? What does it do? What is its purpose?
Without Seaside.
Yeah. Is it a separate? Does it have a separate?
That is the official name. For instance, if you look at Lotus Land, the official 501c3 of Lotus Land is Ganawalska. So we needed to choose a name that was appropriate for really what we've morphed into and the appropriate nature of it.
So it's really one entity.
Entity, yes, and it is a fully tax-deductible 501c3 public charity.
And just one more issue on Paris. They live for a very long period of time.
Yes, they
do. And so there is a likelihood that the parrot will outlive its owner, and so there is a need for rescue of parrots, because when people are deceased, someone has to get the parrot. They're not really, although there is an example in Montecito. I don't know if you're familiar with Hale Park, which is on Camino Viejo, but there are parrots living in the trees there. You hear them in the mornings and the evenings.
Yes, yes.
People must have just let them go, and these were able to survive.
And there are many very, very good parrot rescue places in the United States. We visited a number of them to refer people for that purpose if they want to do that. Our focus is, you know, you can take a child that or an individual that has autism and is not verbal. A parrot that speaks might just spark something in that child, and certainly intellectually produce a sense of wonderment that animal is speaking. So we plan to bring in, we've got our two miniature horses now, bring in some bunnies, therapy dogs for a reading program, you name it, and a few birds around there on the property, more as an attraction and a interactive, for an interactive purpose. But I have to stress, we really are not and don't intend to be a rescue or a sanctuary. That's a whole other direction.
And Debbie, you're the clinical director, and you're a registered nurse as well.
Yes.
And your interest in mental health yes. goes back a long way, even before yes. nursing school. Tell us
Actually,
about that.
Actually, I tried to avoid mental health. I have a family who had a great struggle with mental health issues, and when I was young, I saw what depression and schizophrenia looked like, and I remember taking my uncle into the mental health community resource and trying to get him help. And their level, but I didn't understand the law at the time, the level of function that he had to be at to get help was very specific, but I saw him as pretty dysfunctional. So I actually was very discouraged at a young age in mental health. And when I was in nursing school, an instructor said to me, "Debbie, you're very good at mental health."
Does that mean you're normal?
I don't know. I just understand the lingo. I understand. And so I said, well, and she goes, "I want to give you this placement." I said, "Well, I don't want this placement. I've had plenty of training already." And then she said, and I was choosing between cardiology and mental health. And she said, "Well, I have two placements in the child psychiatry, and I'll give them to you and any friend you choose." Well, I took her up on it, and of course she was absolutely right. I fell in love with the kids because I could see how much could be done and how deep their struggle was. So I ended up doing my master's in child and adolescent psychiatry under nursing. So, you know, when you see what early intervention can do and intervention going onward, you know, it's amazing what you can do. And using real natural resources, being very honest with someone, when you look at the different kind of settings people need, I think it's time we look just beyond a hospital model.
And the path that you chose is really understandable. You had some issues in your family, and you went to nursing school. But Nick, you were in a totally different area. You were in computer sciences at Santa Barbara Unified School District.
That's right. It was a wonderful career down there. And yes, I was the IT guy. I started as a computer operator, moved into programming, then moved into administration for the district.
So you were the guy that always said, you know, just try and reboot it. That was your solution?
No. I showed up on site and always, that's, you know, and that's funny that I just said that, because showing up on site and working with the people at the other end of the phone with the computer systems, and then you see what they do in the school district.
I have to butt in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is where Nick was not just an IT guy. I had run a hospital before I came to Santa Barbara School District in Ventura, and I looked at a lot of computer programs, and they were asking a lot of money, and half the time they weren't performing. So when I came to the school district, I thought I had started over. I got a trash can and a notepad, and I had 16,000 students in 22 sites, and no way to manage how many children and illnesses and mental health issues. So I found a program that looked good to me, and I said, "Nick, would you look at it? I want you to turn it upside down, because I don't want to ask the school to buy anything that's not really good. I won't go down that road." Nick not only looked at it technically, he went to see our staff, our kids, what we do. He was there 400%. You know, he really looked at the people involved, the kids, the staff. And when we purchased it, he helped us when we raised the funds. funding. The program actually brought in, I think, $800,000 the first year that we started billing.
Yes, $800.
So he looked at all aspects of the program. And, you know, I can't say enough about working with Nick. So when Nick started this program, and I said, oh, gosh, we could really kind of merge our visions.
And we'll talk about Nick in a second. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with two leaders of the Seaside Wellness Gardens, Nick Sebastian and Debbie Pentland. And we were talking about how Debbie was really impressed with Nick's IT skills, and that's how they got together on a project that seems pretty far away from IT. So you are... you know, providing an opportunity for people with disabilities to become, in a sense, normalized, to get an experience that makes them feel better about themselves.
Yeah, let me explain. What happens a lot in our society is when you have an individual with disabilities is constantly under pressure to accommodate to their setting. I mean, we're all under some pressure to accommodate to our setting. But it's even more difficulty if you have a nonverbal learning disorder and there's only certain ways you can express yourself properly. So there's double the pressure on somebody to perform in their community, in their schools, in a way that doesn't feel natural to them because their brain works a little bit different, their emotions are tied to different. So what happened is populations in the old days, 40s, 30s, they were isolated. Even diabetics were all put in special schools. And then during the 80s, we started to have inclusion. So individuals with disabilities were included into the school setting, but there was still an enormous amount of emphasis and training to get them to have the skills to participate in the community as we exist, which is needed, except then people don't have much time to be themselves. And you see the pressure. You know, as a school, I'm a nurse for 39 years and a school nurse for 21. And the emphasis was always on the person with a disability to accommodate to their setting. There wasn't much training or support for other people to understand the disability and how it manifests itself and how to interact and how to communicate. So What, and I have two children who, I have three children, two have some significant disabilities. One has a type 1 diabetes and the other has a neurological learning disorder. He has an high IQ, but he can't manifest, express it like everybody else does. So I saw the struggles. My type 1 diabetic, I sought great medical care. But her most healthiest months came after she went to diabetic camp and was with other diabetics in a community that accepted, oh, your blood sugar's 300. It doesn't mean you're a terrible person. Oh, your blood sugar's 40 and you look like you're drunk. But I really know you're not drunk, but other people might think you are. So they need a place where they can feel acceptance, belonging, and competency from within, from where they start.
Well, what I can say is that my oldest grandchild was very, very disabled, and the only two things that she could do that she smiled was horseback riding. She went to a place on the way to L.A. That is a wonderful place, and what was amazing is it was transformative in that it didn't take place 10 minutes later. As soon as she got on the horse, her posture improved, her demeanor improved. So firsthand, I know this works, but the question is, does it have long-lasting impact? So obviously, if a kid is receptive to this, they'll do very well during the program, your daughter in camp. But what happens when they're finished with the horse, when they're finished with camp?
Well, that's good that you say that. That's why our goal is to develop a program that is what we call forever care, forever there. We want people to be able to come and go throughout their whole lives. It's not a camp session. It's not limit. My daughter, after diabetic camp for 2 months, did fabulous. But eventually, she felt worn down. She didn't have a place to go with people who really understood what it was like until the next year. So what we, you know, our plan is to have ongoing activities during the week, during the summer, have family events for the older kids, maybe have some dances on a Friday, Saturday night where they can go and feel comfortable. And so we want it to be an ongoing program here for the children and the adults. So,
but what happens? The child, let's say, is on the autism spectrum, and he goes to a dance or he goes to an event, and he feels comfortable because he's with people who understand him. But then he goes back to school on Monday. What happens? Is there any carryover benefit, or is he still, in a sense, maybe feel even more isolated because, you know, he understands what it could be like to be in a loving, acceptable place?
Well, I have several goals for the program, and one is we will call all the participants, and we want to reframe that they're individuals with disability, that they're diverse ability, that they have abilities that are diverse. Because if you find any individual with a disability, usually if you look the right way, you'll see they have amazing abilities. And so we want to turn that around. And so when they go from one setting to the other, that they feel some confidence in their own diverse abilities. One of the hardest things to do is to accept a disability. Like what I found with mental illness is really treatable. It's the denial that kills you. It's actually not the mental illness that hurts you. It's the denial. But people have to feel accepted. When you're judged and there's all these feelings around you, it's hard to accept, well, where am I starting? What abilities do I have? What strengths? What makes it a little bit difficult? But when you have a setting that says, okay, we're going to practice acceptance, belonging, and competency. Say they just want to sit with the animals but feel very confident because the horse is loving them or the dog is giving them attention, or they want to create plants or water plants, whatever level they feel competent. So some of that will carry over, but that's why we want the other going. So we call the people with diverse abilities participant volunteers. And then we also want ally volunteers, volunteers who, well, everybody can have a margin of disability, but volunteers who have I, for better or worse, fit into the normalized situation. And they're going to become ally participants. They can get high school credit hours for volunteers, but they will really learn about the disabilities. They will be able to support them out into the community because they will understand them. There's a lot of still misunderstanding about disabilities, how to communicate, because there's so much pressure on everybody, teachers' age, to get the child to perform in a certain way. So when you have that much pressure, people don't have time to say, "Whoa, well, really, this other communication skill is really better for this person."
And what makes this problem even worse in the environment of the internet is that bullying is something that is a real problem for everybody. And right. I would imagine if the child doesn't fit into the stereotype of what you're a quote-unquote normal person should be, they're really subject to being bullied. And how do you deal with that?
Well, the ally is critical. See, bullying, when you look at victims, bullies, victims, and bystanders, the most powerful person in a situation when somebody is bullied isn't the bully. It isn't the victim. It's the bystanders. So if you train individuals within the community to be allies, to be supportive, and you've seen this in the LGBTQ community, they have done a fabulous job at educating people, developing an ally situation. Our individuals with disability need that same kind of framework, because when they're being bullied, if somebody walks up and stands up, it dissipates the power of that bully.
We're talking about young people, but when we come back, we should talk about not only young people, but this is applicable to adults.
Yes.
It's applicable to veterans with PTSD. This is a program that, if you can imagine it, that could be palliative for, you know, the entire community.
Yes.
And in a period like we are today politically, where everyone's kind of mean to everybody, it's probably even more necessary. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Nick Bastian and Debbie Pentland from the Seaside Wellness Gardens. And we were talking mostly about young people, but there are in every part of our society, there are people that can use some loving care. And so one of the areas that I think is clearly a need is the veterans. Are you working with veterans as well?
That is in our goal. We got set back a little bit with the fires and the mudslides, but we've started to, we have a few veterans, and we would like to outreach more to the veteran community because we feel that they're vital.
Yeah, speaking of the mudslides, that presented two problems. It presented, and we'll talk about how you were evicted from your and unable to do your services for several months, as so many of us were. But also it creates these disasters created additional tension and additional pressures, which must have manifested itself particularly for people with certain disabilities, so that your mission became even probably more difficult. You had that delay and you had people coming back sort of traumatized.
Right. The fear of the fires and the mudslides and the trauma of it is significant. And that's something that you need to always be aware of and take place over time. Because a lot of times if somebody has a disability that they can't actually express them so much, they're bearing that pain even longer. So you have to be ready that it comes out at any time.
And some of the disabilities, you know, sort of lend itself intuitively to this, like autism. But you also deal with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And how does Alzheimer's patient become...
You know, the same, what I've seen as a nurse, I've hit, and actually I intervened with some seniors out in Montecito because they were trapped and isolated. And, you know, the same kind of philosophy really does apply. You accept, it's critical that the seniors feel accepted and given respect for what they contribute. If you've had a friend or a family member who has Alzheimer's, what I'm fascinated by neurologically is someone with Alzheimer's does not lose their intelligence. Sometimes you'll be having a conversation and they'll be very disoriented, but all of a sudden they'll come in on something and they're absolutely brilliant on their point. So what you have to do is accept them for where they are, recognize their abilities, give them a sense of belonging, you know, and competence. Just because you have a area that is lacking more than the other doesn't mean you've lost all your function.
I was at the CSU Channel Islands graduation a week ago, and CSU Channel Islands is one of our sponsors. And I was able a couple of days later to meet up with the head of the nursing program, and she demonstrated a new virtual reality teaching technique to nurses, where they take the fourth year nurses and they put, you know, the virtual reality goggles on, and they have an avatar that actually talks to them. It does two things. It makes them able to talk to a patient, a virtual patient. You know, you can't practice on a real patient like that. But it also, which is amazing, they have the ability, for example, if you have macular degeneration, they change the vision on the goggles so you begin to have it also.
That's critical. Nursing has always had that in it. With nursing, they want you to have some experience of the patient so you're aware how the patient feels. You know, compassion is a huge part of being therapeutically effective. And to have compassion, you have to have some experience or be able to tie your experience to what the other person is.
Yeah, and even people with compassion sometimes don't understand. And one of the things they're working on in this virtual reality system is to create an ability to see and hear what an Alzheimer's patient is seeing and hearing. So they
That's
can really...
Fantastic.
And one of the things that was so amazing, they found that some people with eyesight problems only saw half the tray in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taught if they're only eating half of the food, turn the tray around.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many, you know, things that are going on that are terrific.
But I think you bring up a very good point. And I think nursing is particularly strong in this. How is the person being affected on the day-to-day life? And what can you see to make that better for them? Because those small helper ideas are vital for them. And changing a tray around so a senior gets the proper nutrition is critical.
So, Nick, besides starting this program, how do you get involved in the day-to-day dealings with the...
And Debbie's laughing. Debbie, as you can hear, is the clinical director and has the background in all of that. My involvement is really on the IT, the financial, the business setup. I've been involved with nonprofits on boards before, so I actually was really surprised, delightfully surprised, that we received our 501c3 status in 5 days. 5 days from the IRS. That's unheard of. Being this detailed person, I have a pharmacy background. I have a medical background as well, with clinical laboratory work and that sort of thing. So I do have some medical, and I'd like to be able to do all of those things at the same time. But and owned a video store on the Mesa, so I have a business background. I working through the school district and with county schools and all, we share a lot of the same network of business associates and school associates, and networking in Santa Barbara is so huge, and it's such a wonderful community that after all of this, I wanted to, you know, stake my involvement in the community very strongly with this project. So I work behind the scenes, getting keeping things rolling, and yeah.
So how do you, so is there a fee if to become a if a young child has some disability and the parent brings the child in, is there a fee to the parents?
There is not. There is not. We're looking forward to not having any fees and generating the funds through community donations, through social media, through grants, that type of thing, so that everyone can make use of the, even if they just come down and stroll the garden and have lunch there, come to visit the horses, that sort of thing. We may have some programs as we go on that we've got a special art project for the adults of, we want to include the entire family in this. And it was interesting that you mentioned the equine therapy. I did volunteer at Hearts Therapeutic Equine Center here in Santa Barbara. Wonderful, wonderful place. And I've backed off of that now. I did it for a couple years now and stopped because so much was going on with this nonprofit. But actually, the event that we just had last week, two of their clients showed up that I knew from helping them do their horse riding. And some were having such problems with balance and with walking, and one of the little guys just ran up to one of the horses, you know. So the progress is immense. Mm-hmm. And so they knew, we discussed that I was going forward on this. One of the things about Hearts, which is really wonderful for the clients, and they pull the families into events, but that child or young adult or adult is on the horse and goes through the program. If they come with their siblings who get to sit and watch, you know, there's not much involvement there. So I wanted to have a place, too, where the entire family can come, do some gardening. We're starting to plant pumpkins, and they'll be watering their own pumpkins and that sort of stuff. And Debbie will speak to this. I'm sure the families with children with disabilities of any type, it's a big impact on the family and on the parents as well as their siblings of who gets the most attention, who doesn't, and all of that sort of thing. So really a very inclusive place that when we have a child, a family that comes down, a disabled person, to work on art, they bring their sister, they bring their mom, and they're all working on it together. And as opposed to the direct classroom area that's valuable too, of course, there's no judgment. And if there's going to be noise in there, that's not going to bother us. If there's going to be distraction of one child that doesn't want to, Debbie was telling me she was there this week.
Yeah, this week it was fascinating. We had about 16 children from Monroe and all their aides. And the aides are very good at trying to get the child to meet the goal. So, you know, they're functioning like they're still in school. So I went over to one child who was really resistant and fighting and sitting on the ground. And so I asked the aide, I said, just let them sit. They just need a few minutes. They wouldn't do the drawing. They would. So we were just talking, and the mother was there, and you could tell the mother felt pressure. And so I talked them down from all the pressure they were feeling to perform. Within 5 to 10 minutes, the young boy started drawing and didn't stop for the next 20 minutes. So I think, again, what comes out is how much pressure that everybody is under, rather than let's just create the environment where they can grow from the inside out and not perform. Because all these children and adults do have diverse abilities. They just like the plants and the animals, they need to be nurtured and given the room. They just express it and take different kind of situations. So that boy drew for the next 20. He filled the paper, but it wasn't on our terms. It was on his terms.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Nick Sebastian and Debbie Pentland from the Seaside Wellness Gardens, not-for-profit. And, you know, we were talking before the break about having siblings come when the child with disability is there. And I imagine that helps the normalization process because the child with a disability sees that there are normal kids playing it as well.
Yes.
So not only does the family get to see what happens, but you're not sending the kid off to some place where the only people are like them. They're in a normalized situation.
Right. Our ally volunteers, our family members. The other thing I don't think people really realize how much pressure families and siblings go through. I just talked to a neighbor recently who said, you know, his grown daughter probably really hasn't dealt with the impact of the mental illness that his son has. And my son, when he was very little, I helped him to accept that he had a disability, and that was hard at times. And I remember him saying to me one day, he turned to me and said, "Mom, how much more are you going to do with my brain?" You know? I said, "Well, no, we're just trying to understand it." And he really does accept, even though it's still pressure. So when families have an individual with a disability, they too go through the feelings of not being accepted, of not feeling a sense of belonging. Okay, what if my child acts up in the next 15 minutes? You know, what if my diabetic gets low and needs a Coke and the PTA looks at me like I'm abusing my diabetic daughter by giving her a Coke. They don't understand what a low blood sugar is. So what happens is the whole family has enormous amounts of pressure and in different settings, and they need to feel acceptance and belonging and competency. I've seen so many parents working with their disabled children, and I stop them and say, you are doing an incredible job. And they're like startled, like, oh my God, nobody said that to me. Because who really understands what it's like to parent a child with a disability, only if you have a child with a disability?
We have a very diverse population in Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. with a big percentage of Spanish-speaking first-generation kids. Are they able to take advantage? Are they aware of this program? Do you have Spanish-speaking people there? How do you deal with that part of the population?
Well, right now we're just bringing in the community from the disabled, and that we're going to build in our ally community. And usually the aides come with them, both have bilingual skills. But that you bring up that we have a diverse population, I have to say that our Latino community is incredibly, there's a lot of love and support. I've actually, when I was working for the school district, interviewed families and I was assessing a child, and they'd bring in the sibling, and I realized that the sibling was autistic, but the family was so caring and loving that they were just accommodating the child, not realizing that the child needed services because he was autistic, not just in. So, you know, there's parts of the different cultures that are advantageous, you know, and then to build the other parts of understanding that, yes, they still need services, that this could become more complicated as they get older. So I also look at the advantages of the community.
So where do the referrals come from? Where do you get, how do people know about this?
Well, actually, right now, we're just doing the groundwork for that. Yeah. And that's why we're starting with school visits. And then what I do is they become on our, we have a website, and people register, and you can sign up as a participant or an ally participant volunteer. And then as I bring the school classes in, I make sure that the parents have access to me or we can talk. And if they sign up, I call them and we do an interview.
So are you getting referrals from the schools now? I mean, are people, are you getting a call from, or do you have a system so a teacher says, you know, this child could really use your help?
No, right now what we're reaching out is to classes. So classes get more and more exposed to.
So you take the whole class down?
I bring the whole, oh, okay. We brought the whole class down. And this way they're comfortable, it's new, they have their supports. So it's not just, this way we bring the intact class down and they get exposure and feel comfortable. And like when we had Monroe down recently, it was great to watch from the beginning of the trip to the end of the trip, the amount of relaxation that happened was not only on the children, but also the adults taking care of the children. They became much more at ease. They felt safe. They felt accepted. They could relax. It's okay if Joey ran in a circle. You know, we have plenty of room to do that. It's fine.
And these kids are it's the whole class, so it's not, you're not isolating then on the child that may have a disability. This is the entire class?
Well, no, this was a class, an art class with children with disabilities. So right now what we're doing is starting with the children with diverse abilities, and we want to build our ally core too. So we ask the person, if Joey wants to come, does he have a friend? Does he have a friend from class? Let's bring in both, whether it be family, peers, and community members, so they're comfortable and that the peers feel comfortable.
And now, what are the hours? Do you open only by appointment?
Right now we're doing appointments. We like to do projects on Saturdays from 12 to 2, and we're going to have some summer school classes have asked to come this summer. So as we build our volunteer base, and if people come and say, you know, evenings will be better for us, we can set up an evening program.
So people can't go there just to play with the animals on Tuesday afternoon at 2:30.
We like to be there for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we is how big? Do you have a staff or is it mostly volunteers?
Mostly volunteers right now.
Yeah, mostly volunteers right now. Mm-hmm. As you said, Neil, though, we calling our phone number or sending us an email, which is available on the website, we can set up a visit anytime. We'll accommodate that. And as we grow and get things going on a daily basis, that'll take place. For now, we do commit for the 12 to noon, but we see other things certainly happening throughout the week and throughout the month during the summer months. Now that everybody's out of school, we'll plan, for instance, we want to do a birthday day a month. And everybody who has a birthday that day, whether it's the child with a disability or whether it is their sibling, their family, for all of the people that have that June birthday, for instance, we'll be doing a birthday celebration. One of the miniature horses is going to be, the youngest one is going to be 2 on the 26th. So we'll be inviting everyone to come down and share. Her name is Pixie, right. Pixie's birthday. And
Nick bakes a beautiful mini horse cake, I have right. to say.
So you're not only good at IT, you were in the drug business, you started a 501c in 3 days, but you also cook?
I also cook horse cakes, right, with oats and carrots and all the good things that they're allowed to have. There are recipes on the internet for horse cakes, yes.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm here with Neil Kreisel, and we're talking today with Nick Sebastian and Debbie Pentland from Seaside Wellness Gardens, which is a new not-for-profit. And one of the things that I find really incredible is that this started in 2014, you said?
2014, and yes.
And you're up and running, and you were able to raise some money?
We were raising some money, yes. We're always needing to move forward with donations. We'll be starting very shortly a capital campaign to hopefully purchase the property down there. It'll always be there. It's kind of funny that before we really got rolling and I started thinking about some other things and had this 501c3 tagline came into my head, Forever Care, Forever There. And as I spoke to the owners of the property, our agreement is if we are able to purchase the property, it would stay the way it is. It's not going to be plowed under. It's not going to, change. A lot of effort by the owner has been put into developing the fully mature botanic garden that's down there. That's very incredible, and I would love to have people just come down for that. It's a full retail nursery and gift store. Mm-hmm. And
that will all be maintained. That's also the beauty of it, that she has developed this incredible garden and a business to go with it, and they're both exceptional. So, you know, the first 2 years, we couldn't find a home. You know, we couldn't find a home that all our people would feel comfortable.
Yes, and you don't want to get all of this started and lease a property or rent a property, and then business venture changes for the property owner, and out you go, and you've got animals, and you've got all these things to do. So I really wanted to do something that's forever, you know, that's really going to be in the community. The need is going to always be there. And Seaside Gardens, which is where we took off on, that's the retail business side of it, and that's where we took off and called it Seaside Wellness Gardens. And we're just got the back part of the property there, and have this really always a community place to give back to Santa Barbara.
And there's so many not-for-profits in this town that are focused on similar missions. I mean, AHA, which is primary sponsor of this show, you know, is dealing with teens, but they're dealing with teens that obviously could would benefit from this type of exposure. And I suspect one of the things you'll be working on is talking to other not-for-profits in town.
Yes.
And doing collaborative types of things.
Absolutely.
Because it goes both ways in terms of, you know, this person could use this group that AHA runs, and AHA says, we'd love to come, you know, look at the animals. And
yes, they need some variety, you know. That's why I speak so highly about Hearts Therapeutic Equine Center, and I would encourage anybody to go up there and check out their program for their child or adult that has disabilities. And they also have a wonderful veterans program at Hearts.
Yeah, we don't feel we're in competition, because the programs that being a nurse, and I've been in Santa Barbara now 35 years, the programs that I've seen are excellent. I love AHA. You know, Hearts is unbelievable. Our mission is going to just serve slightly, where they always have like a home to go to, you know, as they pass through different programs or will refer to the programs, because these programs are critical, both AHA and Heart, and so many. We're actually very lucky in Santa Barbara.
So let's talk about how people can help. One way is to volunteer. So you accept volunteers that don't have a child but just want to do it? So
Absolutely.
Yes.
The opportunities are vast, really, because, yes, whether they are interested in horticulture and plants, a lot of people are very interested in plants. And as you say, a parent or a individual that has Alzheimer's might not care about the rest of the things, but they would like to work and move along the plant area with us.
And the other, obviously, thing that would help is money.
Is money.
So how would you donate money? Can you donate on your website?
Absolutely. Our website is SeasideWellnessGardens.org. That's plural, SeasideWellnessGardens.org. We're also on Facebook. Just look at Seaside Wellness Gardens, and you'll find the activities that are going on there. We're going to be posting a number of new things, as well as what took place with our last event that we had there that Debbie organized for the special needs kids from Monroe. Crowdfunding. I've got a whole ton of things.
We're in the process of writing grants. And looking what this program fits under, because we're looking at a long-term home for people.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you're here, and I hope our listeners can help. Nick and Debbie, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Telling us your story. Thank you for all that you do. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's 3:00.